Today's show is going to be a little bit different. David and I joined our colleague, Josh Lloyd, on the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast to talk about the Miami Heat and its offseason from the perspective of what you should do with your fantasy basketball team. It's a good show. It's a good podcast, the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast. If you're a fantasy basketball player, I definitely recommend checking Josh out. He does great work. Without further ado, here's the show.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Fantrax and Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can follow me on Twitter as always at @RedRock_Bball. We're here, we're ready to do another of the team preview podcasts. Before we get into that, just a reminder that everyone that Basketball Monster is now open for the season and open for memberships. We've got all our projections up there, a stack of articles with more coming every day. So go and check out basketballmonster.com and check out, I'm biased, but it's the best way for you to win your fantasy basketball leagues this season and also to win money in DFS. Today's podcast, we're going to be looking at the Miami Heat. So to talk everything about the Miami Heat, I'm joined by the co-hosts of the Locked On Heat podcast, Wes Goldberg and David Ramil. Wes, first of all, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to have you on, David.
I'm doing great, Josh. I hope everything's going well with you.
Everything's going very, very nicely here for me. So thank you for asking, David. Now, you guys previously hosted a podcast, much like myself, and rebranded onto the Locked On Network. You're previously the Heat Check podcast, and now you're Locked On Heat. Wes, what have you got in the hopper for the podcast? What's your latest episode? What have you got coming up over the next week or so?
Well, David and I have been doing a great preview that we've been really in, or a series that we've really enjoyed, breaking down the top five players at each position in Heat history, and it gives us a chance to kind of look back on some of our favorite players and rank them 5-1 and just talk about some of the great moments in Heat history. So we've really enjoyed that, and all of that's, you know, you can go find that on the Locked On Heat basketball page. You can listen to each show individually. Each position is one individual show, so we've really enjoyed doing that.
Yeah, I've listened to a couple of those ones. They've been really informative, and I love going back through and looking at past players from teams, because there's always names that make you laugh. Now, I'm not sure I haven't heard all of them. Have you discussed much of Ronnie Cycli yet?
No, not yet. He's up next on our center position breakdown, but he'll be one of our top five for sure.
Absolutely. DJ Ronnie Cycli has to be in there whenever you're discussing past Heat legends. Are we going to talk the Miami Heat? Now, there is everything we say here, by the time this podcast is even released or even a couple of days after it, it could be changed because we don't know what is happening with Chris Bosh at this point. So we're going to, you know, sort of factor that in with some of our discussions and mention, you know, what if Bosh doesn't play, what if he does play. Well, actually, let's start with that. If Chris Bosh doesn't play, what do the Heat do at the power forward position?
Well, you have a few natural power forward options. You can obviously slot Josh McRoberts in there as the starter. He's one of the incumbent power forwards on this largely turned over roster, so McRoberts makes sense, at least from a positional standpoint. And so does Derek Williams, the free agent that I'm sure we'll get to talking a little bit about later on. Who we got from the New York Knicks. Derek Williams could play some small ball of four. Maybe they try him out there. James Johnson, who they got from the Raptors, similar in that way. Probably a natural three. Could play small ball of four. And then the other option, of course, is that the Heat could just go and play small, move Justice Winslow to the four, and that creates a lot of interesting different lineups there. But basically, if Bosh isn't able to play, you're probably going to see a lot of mix and match lineups being used to try to replace what Bosh was able to do and just try to fill in a capable roster.
David, with Winslow, we saw him play some four and some five in the playoffs last season, but is that a legitimate strategy for big chunks of time or for the long term, or is it just a mix and match-up type of situation where they go with Winslow at the four? Because if you're going to get the best five players onto the court in a situation where Bosh isn't there, I'd say that makes the most sense, but how realistic is that for something that can continue and for him to actually hold up in that position?
I think you'll see spurts of it. I don't project him to be there long term because I think he's better suited for the small forward position. I think it's his natural fit. But as the league continues to evolve and based on his overall abilities defensively, that's what makes him such a natural fit to fit at so many different positions. He can play the center position legitimately well because I think he's strong enough and agile enough to keep his pace with any larger centers he might have to defend. But I think his role is going to continue to evolve this season Wes and I saw it up close during summer league play, and we talked to some of the coaches and staff, and Winslow's going to be projected to be more of a playmaker now that Dwayne Wade's gone. He's going to be handling the ball a lot more. They're going to look for him to be more of an offensive facilitator. So I think it's probably going to be more out of that small forward slot rather than anything else. Although we could see him play a Draymond Green type role where he's able to make passes into the low post, et cetera, and maybe be more of a playmaker in that regard.
Wes, we'll use this as a discussion on Winslow. Now, he had, from what I think most people would say, a really successful rookie season. He was a key part of a playoff team, a high-seeded playoff team. He was a tremendous defender already. But in terms of his offensive output, it wasn't fantastic. Where does his offensive output grow, or how does it grow this season? Because there is going to be, he's going to have to play a bigger role with Wade and Johnson and Deng not there. He's going to have to take on a larger role offensively. And can he do it, and what are the areas where he improves in that?
Well, the number one thing that everybody's going to point to, if you're just looking at his statistics, is shooting. I mean, he shot 27% from the three-point range last year, 42% from the field overall. That's got to improve. According to the Sun Sentinel, he's been working with a shooting coach, and the Heat and Justice Winslow are very encouraged by the signs that he's showing, but we'll see what happens when he's being cheered on by 20,000 fans and he's got a defender in his face and closing in on him. We'll see if those mechanics are completely fixed. But even as he continues to develop his shot, and I think he will, I don't think that it's broken. He's only 20 years old. He'll develop that shot, but it's not going to be overnight. I think, as David alluded to, and what the coaches were saying during Summer League, the way to get Winslow involved on offense is to let him handle the ball. Because once he's a ball handler, you can't ignore him. And that doesn't completely destroy the Miami Heat spacing. So I think you're going to see a lot of that, you know, with Wade gone, with the need for multiple ball handlers in today's modern NBA. You're not only going to have Dragic facilitating every single possession, you're going to have situations where Winslow's setting things up. And when he's got the ball, and if he's surrounded by three or four other good shooters, which this Heat team does have, then all of a sudden you have an interesting offense. So I think you're going to see a lot of him attacking. He's got a quick first step. If you can get him in like a high pick and roll action with Whiteside or Bosch if he's healthy, or any or you know, a Josh McRoberts type or somebody like that, and all of a sudden you get Winslow rolling to the cutting to the basket, he's really good at that, and he can make plays out of that. He can kick out. We've seen that in flashes that he can do that. So I think, you know, as David said, he's going to be more of a playmaker. He's going to ask to do more things. You're probably not going to see a lot of games where he's racking up 20 points. But you could maybe see on his good offensive nights, maybe 10 to 12, 14 points, 4 or 5 assists, you know, kind of just filling out little different parts of the box score.
You talked about his shooting and shooting in front of 20,000 people. Over the last 3 months of the season, he did shoot over 35% from three. So that's a big step up. Considering he shot 27% for the season, that means the start of his year was horrific in terms of long-range shooting. But to get it up to 35%, that's you know, huge encouragement for what he's going to do this season. Now, in summer league, he did average 16 points a game, but he shot 23% from three and under 30% from the field. But that, to me, is more of a cause of him being, you know, just forcing himself into the primary creator role and the primary scorer role, which he's not going to have this season. So do you take encouragement from that second half rise?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, I think it's not going to mean all that much. You know, we got to really see what happens. I would have taken more away from it if like you said, he didn't regress, so to speak, in summer league.
In terms of fantasy for Winslow, he's not a guy that I think is, look, if he could take a big step forward. So I always encourage people in the last couple of picks of their draft to grab guys who've got an opportunity to step forward. So he's one of those guys, but it might not happen. He might not become a huge statistical contributor. We've got him pegged at about, you know, 11.6 rebounds, you know, over a steal a game with okay-ish percentages, an improvement on last year. David, we talked about some of those, always mentioned some other players who might be power forwards. Josh McRoberts, James Johnson, Derek Williams. Now, McRoberts, I'm concerned that his knees are never going to allow him to play a significant role anymore. Is that a concern that's valid?
Yeah, I think so. A recent picture that made the rounds via social media showed him walking around in a boot, and you know, there are still some concerns whether or not he's going to ever be able to return to full health. It's just been a really tough time for him adjusting to Miami. He was such a key acquisition in the summer of 2014, and although he was looked at as a probable backup in the hopes that LeBron would re-sign. That didn't happen, and then he was thrust into a role where he could never really get acclimated, one injury after another. And then last season, even when he was allegedly healthy, you saw a noted lack of confidence from him, a guy who was such an integral part of the offense when he was with the Bobcats just two seasons ago and helped guide them to their first playoff run. And then all of a sudden, he just wouldn't take a shot from outside. He was just very reluctant to do so. His passing didn't seem as crisp, and he just seemed kind of completely out of it, to be honest with you. And so I'm not really sure what we can expect from McRoberts, because, you know, the skills are there. We've seen them on display over the course of his career in spurts here and there, and much more steadily when he was in Charlotte. And I think a lot of that has to do with Steve Clifford and making him a focal point in that offense. But he just hasn't been able to live up to that role here in Miami. So I can't project exactly how much of an impact he'll have next season. I don't see him as a starter. I know he's capable of doing it, and I think Wes and I are both optimistic that he'll regain that form that we saw a couple of years ago. I just don't see that as being very likely at this point.
I think that he'd be more, if Bosch wasn't there and they decided to go with him as a starter, he'd be more of the Noah Vonleh type of a starter, a guy that, you know, is not going to get more than 20 minutes a night, because I just don't think that his body can do it. And you mentioned he just doesn't look the same. And when a guy is at his age and he's suffered so many knee injuries over the last couple of seasons, it's just tough to see him getting that back. And James Johnson's another guy to me that looks like he's taken a significant step backwards last season. He was a guy that was always a favorite of mine with his ability on the defensive end, to come out and just get a stack of steals and blocks and defend multiple positions. But he looked like he took a big step backwards last season. What do you make of that signing there? It's a pretty low risk move from them, but how does he fit into the rotation?
I think he's a proven veteran, a guy who, has some playoff experience there. And when you look at some of the younger cast now that, are taking over significant roles with Wade's absence, with Joe Johnson and Dang and others, it's good to have a guy like, Johnson, who can prove that, to the lower guys there, the younger guys, what it takes to get to this level, to maintain a high work ethic. And yeah, he might have taken a step back as far as his on-court production, but I think his personality is something that's going to be missing. Wes and I have talked a great deal about, with Dwayne Wade's absence, now there seems to be a lack of leadership in the locker room, and you don't know what to expect from Chris Bosh, whether he'll be available to play or not. And while Udonis Haslem is clearly a guy who's going to be a locker room presence, you need guys like, Johnson to be able to fill that role and help guide the team, even if he's not doing it with his on-court play. Because at least he's always been an effort guy, if nothing else. He may not have the same kind of talent level as others, but he always kind of recognized that ability to work harder and outwork anybody else.
Wes, do you see Johnson as being a regular part of the rotation?
I think it really depends on what the Heat do with Justice Winslow, because I think James Johnson is a Winslow light in so many ways, where he's very limited on offense, but he can play, he can defend a lot of different positions. He's big, he's got a good frame, he's one of those try-hard guys that's just going to hustle every play. So if the Heat are playing Winslow a lot at the 3 and the 4, and they're basically using James Johnson to spell Winslow for, 12 minutes a game or whatever it might be, then I think Johnson could play a big role in that way, just because he could be redundant of Winslow, even if he's not completely, doesn't have all the on-ball capabilities of a Justice Winslow. So I think that's probably going to be his role, if I were to guess. I wouldn't count on him having a really large role or even getting a significant amount of minutes. Eric Spoelstra's got like a weird way of playing guys like 18 minutes one night and then like 2 or 3 minutes the next night. James Johnson just like screams like inconsistent minutes to me for this season.
Yeah, that's the way that I see it as well. There'll be nights where he doesn't play at all. There'll be nights when he plays a bigger role, and he'll fit into that. And again, a lot depends on Bosch's health and McRoberts' health as well, because if those two guys aren't there, then he's going to be forced into a more regular role in the rotation. We talk about Bosch, and if he isn't ready to go and he's forced to retire, which is a possibility at this point, but we really don't know how it's going to go. Yeah, what does Pat Riley do? Does he just go all in with the kids and start a rebuild? That's not really been something he's ever done in the past. He's not someone who's ever really focused heavily on the draft. How does he look to play this team? Does that just mean that we're going to get stacks of Winslow and Tyler Johnson and Josh Richardson and those guys and really build around those players?
I think that's what it looks like. I mean, you just look at the core of these guys.
I wouldn't think so. I don't think a rebuild is in Riley's nature.
I don't think a rebuild, but I think building around the core and seeing what happens and just letting the veterans just kind of almost not complimentary is not the right word, but the like I think just a sheer numbers, a majority of this team is younger. So then you're going to also have Goran Dragic, who's like leading the offense. If Chris Bosh could play, who knows? But if Chris Bosh can't play, I think Goran Dragic leads the offense. But I think this team is really built around what Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow and Hassan Whiteside can do. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, look, I agree with that. And see, Riley's not going to go full-on rebuild, but he's not going to be, you know, just, oh, okay, we're dealing Dragic away or anything like that. But the young guys are a huge part of this call, regardless of if Bosch plays or not, I think. David, how do you view it?
I agree that Riley's not cut out for a rebuild. I mean, in 21 years with the team, they've only missed the playoffs four times. And to be honest with you, I would actually expect him to make a bigger move for a proven superstar. I don't know if one's available. Who knows what's going to happen with guys like Griffin or, you know, Westbrook or others. But to me, Riley's always been a guy who swings for the fences, and he'll make a move, and he'll package younger players together like Winslow and others to make a move for a couple of veterans. That's just the way he's always built this team. We saw when he first came on board and traded away a star shooter in Glenn Rice to acquire Alonzo Mourning, and he's done it throughout the years. He'll do whatever it takes. Draft picks mean nothing to a guy like Riley, and younger players with upside are great to have. They're great commodities, but unless they're generational type talents like Dwayne Wade, he'll be willing to ship them out for another proven superstar. So I wouldn't be surprised to see if a guy like Winslow gets moved if this Heat team struggles and Riley doesn't want to wait too long for a rebuild.
Well, let's stick with you, David, and talk about young players with talent, because there's obviously a huge gap opening up at the two with Dwayne Wade gone. Who is your early favorite to start in place of Dwayne Wade?
I think Wes and I are both in agreement that Josh Richardson provides the better chance for this team to remain consistent and continue winning. We saw some really great positives from him late in the season. He came on board and shot the lights out from three-point range. He was amazing. He tapered off a little bit, understandably, in the playoffs, but he was a really, really solid on-ball defender, very athletic, explosive, gets to the rim, and can finish with ease. And you know, we're struggling with him to see some more consistent ball handling, and I know that was a major focus point during the summer league play, and I think the coaches have all spoken that that's the next area of development for him, to be more consistent as a ball handler and playmaker. But he has that capacity, and you know, his versatility as a defender in combination with a guy like Winslow, you can switch either one to play either the two or the three spot. And I think Richardson's a more natural fit in the lineup. There are other great options in the lineup as well. Notably, you know, Dion Waiters, who signed a short-term deal here with Miami, had some good moments in Oklahoma City, and he still struggling to maintain any kind of consistency in his NBA career. But you also have the re-signed Tyler Johnson. You know, they just brought him on board on a lucrative contract, you know, a guy who was working his way up through the D leagues just a couple of years ago and showed enough potential to be rewarded with a big time contract. He's got that same kind of versatility. I just don't know if he has the durability to be a regular starter at the shooting guard position, because I think there are some concerns about his, you know, his health and whether or not he can stay healthy. But he does have that potential. He's got a lot of athleticism, a lot of great effort defensively as well, and he can shoot the ball from 3-point range. So he's a good player, a good addition on the team.
Wes, I'm in agreement with both of you that Richardson should be the guy that starts there at the two. He was a tremendous shooter last year. After the All-Star break, he hit 53% of his three-pointers. Now, that's clearly not going to continue. He's not going to be the greatest three-point shooter. Maybe he is, but he's most likely not going to be the greatest three-point shooter of all time. So that's going to regress. But we saw in Summer League, he almost averaged 5 assists per game in a role where he was handling the ball a lot. So, you know, is that something that Richardson takes forward, Wes, this season, and he becomes, you know, a secondary ball handler in that starting five?
Well, in college, that's what he did. He was the initiator of Tennessee's offense. He was the point guard, and then the Heat, basically with Dwayne Wade, you know, handling the ball so much, and then Goran Dragic, of course, the nominal point guard. Josh Richardson was really forced to be a catch and shoot guy from 3-point range for so much of his rookie season, but the coaches were working on Josh's ball handling and facilitating on offense during summer league. That was really a big focus of theirs. So there's no doubt that the coaching staff is looking at Josh for that. I mean, just in general, the Heat's roster, you're going to see with Wade's absence, I mean, Wade was definitely getting up there in age, there's no doubt about that, but the usage rate was always high for Wade. When he's on the court, he was the default guy with the ball. I mean, he initiated so many things on offense. We tend to think of Wade as a scorer, but the way that he was able to facilitate last season, I mean, at one point, I thought it was one of the best seasons he's had his whole career, just as far as facilitating. That's a huge gap that not just one guy is going to fill. That's including Goran Dragic. So you're going to see guys like Winslow and Josh Richardson, a lot of and Tyler Johnson, and even Deion Waiters probably, facilitating a lot of offense and a lot of guys getting different chances to handle the ball and see what they could do with it. So for Josh, I certainly think that's going to be a big part of his game this season.
I think much like I touched on earlier with Winslow, Richardson's a great guy to pick in the last rounds of drafts because there's an opportunity that for him to get significant minutes at the two. Look, he could start and they could sort of split minutes with Waiters and Johnson, but he could just fully grab it and play 32, 33 a night. That's probably not the most realistic situation at the moment, but it could happen. He could get hot again from three. He could start averaging 3.5 to 4 assists. That's not a crazy amount. And Wade averaged over 5 assists a game last season from memory. Richardson gets steals. He hits threes. He's a solid scorer. He is a really solid prospect. And the Heat, obviously, a fair steal to get him in the second round of the draft last year. Now, speaking of the draft, guys, the Heat had no draft picks this year. We talked about Riley disregarding the draft as a way really to build, despite the success he had with Winslow and Richardson last season. So, but in free agency, they brought in some players. We've talked about James Johnson already. We touched a bit on Derek Williams, but David, Deion Waiters coming in. He is a very divisive figure, or maybe not divisive because most people just don't like him and don't value him, but he showed a lot to me for the Thunder, especially in the playoffs, playing a subdued role, a really good defensive role. Do you think that without Durant and without Westbrook next to him that he goes back to his old shot-jacking ways and irresponsible offensive play?
I don't think so. I think there was a little bit of a turning point there last season with the Thunder kind of adapting to a new coach there and Billy Donovan with Oklahoma City. And I think that, I mean, you look at what he was facing when he was in his 2.5 year stint with the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, that was a team that was rebuilding. There was a lot of, turmoil there as far as the front office is concerned and a poor coaching staff. In Miami, there's always been a clearly established culture, at least there has been for the 2 decades plus that Riley's been there. So with Spoelstra kind of taking over that, I think it's a much more stable environment for Waiters to continue growing. And I think he's been a player throughout his 4 years that thinks very highly of himself, and I think that's part of the divisive nature there. But at the same time, he has that confidence, and I think, as Wes and I have talked about a number of times, because we're both really big fans of Waiters and the kind of chaos that he brings on occasion, I think he wants to get better, and that's a big sign of encouragement, I think, for Heat fans. I think, a lot of them tend to think of him in face value and think of him as being erratic and everything else. And yeah, sure, there are moments of inconsistency and when you're kind of left scratching your head wondering why he made that pass or why he took that shot. But overall, there's a willingness to continue growing and developing there. And I think he does have that versatility and talent to continue to be a much more consistent productor off the bench.
He is he's a solid passer. He's a better passer than people will give him credit for. He can rack up assists to a degree. And 4 assists out of a shooting guard is something that is not out of the realm of possibility for him in a full-time role. He's a pretty good defender, but he's overall not a fantastic fantasy contributor because he's a poor shooter from the line and from the field. He just doesn't get involved much rebounding-wise. He doesn't do a huge amount there. So he's not someone that I'm really all that intrigued about. I'd much rather be taking a pick on Richardson later in a draft. Wes, Willie Reed came across. Now, he had some games last season at the end of the year with Brooklyn when Brook Lopez was out resting that Reed would come in and he'd put up some big numbers. But then he disappeared from the team. He was out for the rest of the season with a personal issue, and it was concerning. I was worried we weren't going to see Willie Reed back in the NBA at all, but he's back. He's here for Miami. What is his role look like on the team? Because I think that as a backup center, he's a guy that can be impactful and can produce because the Heat don't have a huge amount of depth there.
If you allow me to plug my own work really quick, I just did a full breakdown on this on allyoucanheat.com. So I'm just going to basically... I mean, I just got done studying him all day yesterday, and I really dug into it. And 91 of his 133 shots last season were from the restricted area. So basically, that's where this dude survives, right? He shot 70% from there, mostly dunks and tip-ins and just short layups. And that's where this guy is going to survive. Because once he goes out of that restricted area, it's down to 30%, and then once he's past like 5 to 7 feet, I mean, just forget about it. The guy's just completely useless as a scorer. So as far as scoring, he survives on tip-ins and cleaning up the boards and all that and everything that goes with that, getting dump-offs. What he does really, really well is finding open spaces in the defense where he's being ignored and can get open for dump-offs. So you're going to see like maybe a lot of baseline cuts for this guy, or just kind of, you know, standing around near the basket waiting for shots to go up, or waiting for maybe Goran Dragic to just go up for a layup and then dump it off to a wide open Willie Reed right under the rim where he'll just dunk it in. So you'll see a lot of that. I think my apprehension with Willie Reed is because he can't really shoot and because he's such a non-factor, teams are going to play off of him. And when that's the case, if Chris Bosh isn't able to play, Miami doesn't have a lot of shooting options at power forward. We just went over them. Derek Williams, James Johnson, Justice Winslow, Josh McRoberts. Those aren't guys that are very good shooters. Those are below average shooters. And if you pair them with Willie Reed, you have two guys that just cannot space the floor. And that's going to be a major issue. So Willie Reed's playing time could really be attached to whoever they have available to start at power forward. They could be attached to whether or not Justice Winslow actually does take a leap from three-point range this season with his jump shot. I mean, so that to me would be, the minutes would be where my apprehension lie with Willie Reed. That said, he's a very good rebounder. He finds open spaces in the defense. He is lean enough and athletic enough where he can kind of handle the ball a little bit near the perimeter and help with some dribble handoffs and some facilitation in that way with setting up the offense, can set some screens. He reminds me a lot of what Chris Anderson was with the Heat maybe 3 or 4 years ago when they first got him. But what made Anderson so good for the Heat was that he was always surrounded by four other shooters. I don't know if the Heat will be able to do that, particularly if Bosh can't play. So I think a lot of that comes in is what's going to matter when it comes to Willie Reed.
He's a pretty solid defender, though. Like last year after the All-Star break, he blocked 3.6 shots per 36 minutes. It was only 13 games. But and you mentioned his rebounding, especially offensive rebounding as well. He grabbed 5.2 offensive boards per 36 in that post-All-Star stretch as well. David, how do you see him fitting in? Is he a guy that will be an every-night player or just an occasional contributor if Bosh is out?
Well, I think if Bosh is out, then he'll definitely be a much more regular contributor. I think, Udonis Haslem is the only other real option at center there, and that's not much of an option at this point in his career. He's basically there as an assistant coach that happens to be wearing a uniform. So I think, you know, Reed is a good player who can play some significant amount of time there, backing up Hassan Whiteside, who we're not quite sure how he'll adjust this season. You know, he was prone to getting in foul trouble at times. So you wonder if the roster is already depleted with Bosch still nursing an injury, if Whiteside gets in foul trouble, whether or not Spoelstra feels comfortable going to Reed early on in a game and kind of having him use up some of those minutes there and get some playing time there. So I'd say that he will be playing a significant amount of time.
One more free agent sign before we get into the bigger names on this roster. Wayne Ellington came across from the Brooklyn Nets. I don't really get it. I understand that he's a decent three-point shooter, but he's I don't know. I don't understand how he fits into this rotation. David, can you enlighten me on it?
He had a pretty good game against the Heat a few seasons ago. And I think that was basically what kind of set off their radar there. And I think the Heat also acquired him before Waiters became available as an unrestricted free agent, before they had matched Brooklyn's offer to Tyler Johnson. So I guess they kind of saw him as being more of a three-point specialist that could come off the bench, similar to what James Jones did in recent seasons during the Big Three era in particular. He was just a guy who would go in there, and if he needed to space the floor, he would help out significantly. Although the roster was much deeper as far as shooting is concerned. But Ellington provides, you know, some spacing there. So if you need a shot in the waning seconds of a quarter or a close game, I'd see him getting some playing time there. Other than that, I'm not quite sure. I think there might be some time available for him at point guard, or some people have theorized that he might be better at the one, but he's just not that ball handler or distributor that I think would fit that role very well. So I'd see him just playing very sporadically on those occasions where you need to space the floor, or maybe in a blowout or something like that. But other than that, he's not going to get any kind of major burn.
Wes, we've touched on Hassan Whiteside already. He is signed fresh off a huge contract. He is, especially with Bosch potentially not there, and Wade and Johnson and Deng, he's got to take a bigger role this season. We saw down the stretch last year that he played off the bench. Spoelstra was reluctant to give him 30-plus minutes on a lot of nights. What changes this year? Does that change? Does Spoelstra just go, we've just got to get him out here 32 minutes and get him more involved offensively? Does anything change with Whiteside?
Well, I think he'll certainly be the starter, and that's not going to change. I think if I wanted to echo Pat Riley's comments after the season in his end of year press conference, he said, you know, it's time for Whiteside to put the team on his back. I mean, and what he means by that is, especially now without Wade, right, is this team could play a four-out system, but that only works if Whiteside starts passing the ball more, and he's a notoriously bad's not the right word, because when he has passed, he's shown that he does have vision in flashes. Like, he could do it. Like, he's able to throw the ball to another player, and that player can score from that throw. But he just doesn't do it. He will rather just crash into two or three defenders and just put a shot up. And that's where so many of his misses come from. And it's not that it's not like this guy misses a lot near the rim, because his efficiency is insane. So just imagine if he was to start taking some of those bad shots and instead dump it off to the cutting guy along the baseline, or pass it out to a wide open Goran Dragic for three or something like that. I think that's the next step for Whiteside. I don't know if he could do it. I haven't seen any evidence to see that he can become a willing passer. But at the same time, the coaching staff asked him to be a better free throw shooter, and overnight, essentially, he became a better free throw shooter. I mean, what this guy has been able to do, I mean, out of the league and within a season and a half, finishes third in Defensive Player of the Year voting. I mean, if from everything we understand from Whiteside, if you ask him to get better at something, he starts to get better at it. You know, even little things like setting better screens, which is why he got benched in some respect in the first place, because Amari Stoudemire was just setting better screens for his teammates, and then Whiteside came in, eventually got the starting job back, and started setting better screens. So I don't know. It's just like, can he become a better passer? Well, if he can improve in that area like he's improved in two or three other areas in just such a short time span, absolutely. But who knows with this guy?
You touched on his passing. Who's the least happy to pass, him or Shabazz Muhammad?
I think Whiteside, just because I think Shabazz Muhammad is definitely a volume scorer, but I think that's like his MO. I think for Whiteside, it's more like when he scores, he really likes the celebration afterwards. So he passes it out. It's just like, if he starts flexing afterwards, that looks like stupid because he didn't dunk it or something. Like, it's just, I think he really enjoys the physical nature of scoring. That's why I think he just rams into like two and three guys and just takes bad shots. I think he likes the physical contact of it all.
He needs to do the Andrew Bogut celebration where you pass it out to Steph Curry, then just walk off the court with your finger raised up in the air. That's how you celebrate a pass or an assist. But unfortunately, the Heat don't have a Steph Curry on the team who can maybe Josh Richardson with his 53% three-point shooting. Maybe he can be that guy. Well, Hassan just passes it out. Wayne Ellington, exactly. Get Wayne Ellington out there. Hassan passes. He can just run off, hands up in the air, celebrating his second assist for the season in February. Now, with Whiteside for fantasy, he's a guy that you got to look at in the first round because he's got stacks of rebounds. I think his scoring takes a big jump up this season. He blocks a lot of shots, huge field goal percentage. And we talked about his free throw percentage. It's fine now. It was 50% in his first season in Miami. It was 65% last year, but after the break, he shot 75%. And as you mentioned it, they said, you know, work on your free throws. He went, cool, I will. And he did, and it worked. And that's, you know, people might look at it as a fluke, but David, do you think that free throw percentage is real and it's just going to stay in those, you know, mid to low 70s?
Yeah, he adapted his form. I don't know if you saw him late in the season, but he wound up incorporating that little kind of jumper type hop at the end of his free throw, and it seemed to work. And I mean, it was funny looking and everything else, but it continued to work. And at first you'd think, oh, he's going to keep, you know, he's going to miss it or change or something like that, because there's just so much potential, as Wes alluded to. He's just, there's so much that he can do, and just whether I'm not sure how they would be able to acquire a guy like that for their fantasy lineups, because, you know, you're going to have a night where he's going to be really productive and another night where he's not going to be quite as enthusiastic or engaged. So I think his free throw percentage, though, will remain consistently in the 70s.
After the break, he averaged 17.5 points, 13.3 rebounds, 0.7 steals, 3.4 blocks on 59 and 75%. That's clearly top 10 value in fantasy. You can probably get him, you know, maybe outside the top 10, but I would have no concern. I think that the blocks are going to be enough almost to win you that category. Massive rebounding, huge field goal percentage, not harming you in free throw percentage. And the scoring, you might look at, we've got him, yeah, I think projected at about 17 points a game for this season. And you might think that's too high, but he did it for 2 months of the season last year, and he's going to have a bigger role. And you referenced those Riley comments about putting the team on his back. He's going to have to do that now. He's going to have to be more involved in what this team does. Wes, who's a breakout candidate on this team? So there's quite a few.
Well, we talked about him earlier, Josh Richardson. I think of the two rookies in particular, Josh Richardson, to me, probably has more fantasy value because he's going to score more, probably, than Justice Winslow. I mean, Winslow does a lot of like cleanup scoring and just makes winning plays, as Spoelstra likes to say. But Richardson, he's going to get you a high three-point percentage. He should get enough touches handling the ball where he's going to get you maybe 3 to 5 assists per game. And I like his potential to score a lot of points on any given night. I think there's an opportunity for him to be one of the top scorers on this team. And then other than Josh, obviously, I think Goran Dragic, you're going to, if you, with Wade gone, obviously he's handling the ball, you can expect maybe a 3% bump in his usage rating to get back to his Phoenix days, which would essentially, you know, that could mean, with a similar usage rate, 6 more points per game than what he averaged last year, which would be like 20 points per game, as opposed to 14 points per game. So I think Dragic is the obvious big one, but don't sleep on Josh Richardson.
I agree completely with Dragic. If you look at his numbers from last season of what he was able to do when Wade was on the court versus what he did with Wade off the court, the difference is significant. He had a true shooting percentage 54% without Wade, and when he was playing with Wade, it was 51, because he was, you know, in a role where it wasn't comfortable for him. He was a basically go stand in the corner and spot up guy. He was 9.9 assists per 100 possessions versus 7.9 when he was played with Wade. And his fantasy points, so from a DFS perspective, went from 0.96 to 0.76. So we're looking at it now without Wade. And then we've got no Deng, we've got no Johnson. He is a comfortable top 50 fantasy player to me. And back when he was in Phoenix, he was a guy that was a top 30 type player. He might not get back to that level, but everything we've seen is he hasn't lost the talent. Just the role wasn't there, and now the role's back. So I agree completely with you on Dragic. He's a huge guy to look at in terms of just bouncing back and having these seasons. Do you, David, do you have anything to go with that or to go against any of that?
No, I think Dragic is perfect. My only concern with him is that he's shown that he doesn't get a lot of trips to the free throw line, so that's always been a concern with me. I don't know if it's referees kind of being prejudiced against him. We've talked about this before in other podcasts, and we really have no explanation for it, but he just doesn't seem to get a lot of foul calls going his way. Maybe he's not that kind of superstar to earn those kind of calls. But, you know, at several points last season, he was beat up and bloodied and, you know, had his teeth knocked out on more than one occasion and didn't get a foul call on either one of those occasions. So that's something to be kind of concerned with moving forward. But I hope that that's something that can increase next season as he has the ball in his hands more often.
He's also a really high efficiency player in terms of his field goal percentage. He's a guy that, you know, hovers around that 50% as a point guard, which is extremely rare, and he can really help you in that area. Not a huge three-point shooter, not a great guy at getting steals, but you're going to get solid rebounding, you're going to get solid assist, good scoring, and really efficiently. He's going to be doing that really efficiently. David, let's talk Bosch. If you had to say now, does he play again for the Heat?
All points seem to indicate that he will be. I think when you get a tweet from the owner, Mickey Arison, saying, can't wait to see you out there, and you hear the different reports from local media saying that he's working with the team in conjunction to find some kind of solution and that he'll get some kind of playing time, I think that seems much more likely than, say, a few months ago. We started hearing, especially at the end of the last season, that there was pretty contentious situation there between Bosch and his family, his wife in particular, tweeting out some things on social media, indicating that maybe they wanted to play and that the Heat was restricting him and things of that sort. But it seems like maybe there's more cooperation between the two parties now. So I think he'll play this season. Now, we've also found out recently that part of the stipulation that might influence his playing time or a decision regarding his playing time is that he can play up to 9 games this season and still wind up, if he takes a major setback as far as his health is concerned, he could still take that medical exception and his contract would still come off the books. And that's always been a major point of contention for the team because they're not sure whether or not he's going to live up to the contract that he signed a couple seasons ago, clearly with the injuries and everything else that's been a concern. So if he winds up playing 9 games and during that course of those handful of games, there's a setback of some kind or he realizes he's not going to be able to play at 100%, then the team could talk to him and maybe see if they could apply for a medical exception, and then his salary will come off the salary cap.
In terms of what you do with Vosh in fantasy, his draft position is pretty high at the moment. I would never be taking a risk on him inside the top 60, but if he slides out to like 90 or 100, that's fine because there's a definite risk. You don't want to waste a top 4 pick on a guy that might not play or that might play, and as you said, get out there for 9 games and then not be able to play again, or play 40 games and not be able to play again. And you'd think if he had one more setback, then it would be pretty much curtains for his career after that, unfortunately. But it's a reality. He's obviously got to look after his health. But he's a guy that's going to really impact what the Heat does in terms of their season and their fortunes for this year. Without him, Wes, do you think they struggle to make the playoffs without Bosch?
Absolutely. I mean, a healthy Bosch is probably Miami's best all-around player.
Yep.
Just because of what he can do as far as stretching the floor, facilitating the offense from the elbow. Obviously, his defense is spectacular. And if without him, I mean, that's a huge hole that they have at power forward. We've already talked about it. Like, who do you play at power forward if you don't have Chris Bosh? I mean, just that alone really hurts. And you start playing, games with who you can kind of slide into the four, and you start doing this mix and match lineup thing that Eric Spoelstra has done well with in the past. But if we're going to talk about a whole, 40, 50, 80 games of doing that, that's really going to hurt the team.
A couple of other guys that the Heat brought in, Luke Babbitt came across from the Pelicans in a trade, but he fits in the Wayne Ellington category for me. Yeah, you can shoot threes, but I don't see how he fits the rotation. There's no way he gets a regular spot, is there, Wes?
No, I think what you saw with Babbitt is the Heat needed to get a bunch of guys before their deadline to match Tyler Johnson, and it was basically a few hours that they had, and they were able to grab Babbitt from New Orleans, and to what amounts to a contract that is less than the veteran minimum with the spiked cap this last summer. So as far as value, if you're just looking for a 15th guy on the roster, he's probably one of the best values in the league as far as 15th man on the roster, just because you're paying him less than what you're literally allowed to pay a veteran who you're about to sign as a free agent. They traded for him because he signed his contract before this spike cap. That's all it is. Maybe you're talking about a Wayne Ellington type, like you said, where he comes in, he can shoot a three, maybe he gets some stretch 4 minutes in some wacky lineups, but really, don't count on Babbitt for much.
He's better than a 15th player on this roster to me. I think he's better than Allington. I think he's better than Haslam. He's not better than anyone else there. But you mentioned he can play some four, and he had some decent games towards the end of last season with New Orleans when they had their entire team out, basically. But he took on big minutes, and he was able to play okay. So he's definitely a break glass in case of emergency type player, but he's not completely useless if he's given that opportunity. David Tyler Johnson, let's talk about him because non-NBA fans, casual NBA fans would have seen the contract that Brooklyn offered him and then the decision of the Heat to match him and go, how is this guy getting this much money? The Heat have got him obviously cheap for the next 2 years, and then the contract goes out of control, almost up to $20 million after that. What's his role in this team? Is he the primary backup point guard, or are they looking to make him that maybe next season? Because I know there's had some concerns about his ball handling and that he's not fully ready to be a full-time point guard. What's his best position, and where does he fit in this season?
Prior to signing Waiters, I would have said his best role would be to back up the shooting guard position, and then when you take Goran Dragic out of the starting lineup, slide Josh Richardson over there and have him be the primary ball handler. Although there are some concerns with Richardson, I think he's a better ball handler at this point, and he's taller, more athletic than Tyler Johnson. So I think Johnson's a more natural fit at the two guard. I think there's some concerns about his size, and maybe that's why he might slide naturally over into the point guard position. But even when he was playing alongside Wade, in many lineups last season, the year before, he wasn't the ball handler. It was still Wade facilitating an offense, and Johnson just happened to be riding alongside him.
So they've definitely got some concerns about that. But from what I understand, they're trying to develop him into being more, as they're doing with Richardson as well. But Richardson, I would say, is more further ahead. But Johnson's an interesting character, I guess. He hasn't come through the traditional pathway of through the draft. He was a D-League, I think a 10-day contract guy. He came around the same time as Hassan Whiteside, if I'm correct.
Yep, absolutely.
So they both came in on those 10-day deals and parlayed it into a huge contract. He's really, I was going to say sneaky athletic, but I don't want to use the standard white guy code because he can throw down some huge dunks. He's pretty quick, but the shoulder problem is a concern to me. Wes, is that a concern to you that he's just had that shoulder problem that cost him so much time?
Absolutely, and we talked about his athleticism. He can shoot the three. He's an able and willing defender. If the guy has a weakness, it's that shoulder. It's his injury. It's his injury issue. So, you're paying $50 million to a guy with some shoulder issues. It could be worse. You could be paying $50 million to a guy who can't shoot a three-pointer or can't, play defense worth a lick. But that's his weakness.
I think he's a really sort of underrated player who's got an opportunity to perhaps leapfrog waiters this season. We don't know how they're going to run that backup position, but I think that he gets potentially more minutes than waiters. He runs the one and the two, and if that ball handling and passing develops, he can be a real fantasy threat, a guy. And I like these players who can potentially grab you 5 rebounds and grab you 4.5 assists and get you a steal and hit you a three and do it all efficiently. He can do that sort of right across the board, almost like a poor man's Victor Oladipo, just a guy that does bits of everything. He's a better shooter than Oladipo. He's not a better scorer though, but just be able to do things in different areas. So like I talked about with Winslow and Richardson, Johnson's a fine pick at the end of a draft because we just don't know exactly how the Heat are going to distribute those minutes across those shooting guards. We all agree that Richardson will probably be the starter, and then I think that Johnson gets a little bit more than Waiters in terms of playing time. How do you see that, David? Do you see Johnson playing more than Waiters?
Yeah, unfortunately so, because I think Waiters might have more versatility and more room for growth. And also, out of a personal concern, Waiters signed a short-term deal hoping to parlay the absence of Wade into more playing time and thinking that this might be the right situation for him. And it looks like he's going to strike out yet again because all of a sudden he joins this backcourt that's glutted with options. So I'm not quite sure how his minutes will be allocated. I could see Waiters getting some time at the three, though. I could see him playing a little forward. I think he did that for the Thunder on occasion last season at small ball lineups, and I think it would work with him here in Miami as well.
I think Richardson can play the three as well. He's big enough. I think he's a solid enough defender. And if that situation arose where Bosch isn't playing and Winslow is at the four, then you're going to see Richardson and Waiters and Dragic all together, or Richardson, Johnson, and Dragic all together at the 1-2-3 and play that really small lineup. But I think that Richardson, we mentioned he can move to the one. I think he can move to the three as well and be a wing ball handler and a perimeter defender. Where's Beno Udrih? He last season, the NBA wasn't all that impressed with him taking that buyout deal with whispers of a future promise of him being re-signed by the Heat, which came to fruition. He comes in as the backup to Dragic. And last season when Dragic had to miss time and Udrih had to go into the starting lineup, the offense worked solidly with him. So he's just a veteran insurance. Do you think that he's a guy that's irregularly going to get into the rotation, or it's going to be, let's give Richardson 5 minutes of handling the ball, let's give a couple to Waiters, let's give a couple to Johnson, or they're going to continually just go Udrih 15 minutes a night style?
If you would have asked me this right when they signed him, I probably would have said he's not going to play a lot. You're going to see a lot of Waiters, Richardson, and Tyler Johnson taking the ball. But the more and more I've thought on it, I think you're going to have a few minutes, a regular slot of minutes a night slotted for Udrih to come in and back up Goran Dragic. I don't know if it'll be 15, but maybe it's somewhere between 5 and 10, something like that. And just to make sure that, and it might be maybe early in the game, just as the offense is trying to get set. I don't know, somewhere where he's got like his time to come in, once a half. I think that's what you're going to see from Beno, and he's probably not going to be scoring a whole lot. It's mostly facilitating, mostly just trying to maintain whatever flow and tempo it is that Dragic went ahead and set. And the only reason I say all this is because I think as much as the team is focused on trying to develop Richardson and Tyler Johnson and their point guard skills, they're still young, you know, and their strengths at this point aren't really being on the ball or facilitating a heavy amount. And if you're going to need somebody to facilitate and get other guys set up and it for scoring, that's, and it's not Dragic, if he needs a break, then that's Ben Udry. So I think that'll be his role this season.
I think that if Dragic has to miss time, that they would move Udry into the starting lineup and run him as the full-time point guard rather than say, let's get Johnson out there for, you know, 30 minutes a night at the one. I think that Udry would take a significant jump up the depth chart in that situation. David, we're almost done here. The Heat have got four other guys signed to contracts at the moment who are unlikely to make the roster. Rodney Magruder, Akaro White, Stefan Jankovic. But the most important one, the most intriguing one to me is Bryonte Weber, who I thought was a lock to make the roster before they signed Udry. Now, it doesn't appear like he's going to be able to make this 15-man roster. He's a super aggressive defender. He's an equally bad offensive player. What do you make of Weber, and does he have a chance to unseat someone on this roster? Could they waive a Babbitt just to get him locked in?
I don't see it likely as happening, especially when you have guys like Waiters and Udry already on board. And that's unfortunate because I think, we know, Wes and I are both fans of Weber's game. We saw it up close in Summer League, and you know, he's a guy who's worked hard to get to this point. And he does have a lot of potential, just not able to do so as consistently as you know, the Heat would like. And I guess they're just hoping that he'll be a much more stable shooter, and that's just something that's been a weakness in his game. As a defender, they like his length and his tenacity and everything else, but I don't know if that's enough to keep him around, considering you have able, versatile defenders like Winslow and Richardson and everybody else in the lineup. You don't need him as a specialist or anything like that, and because of his erratic offensive behavior, I just don't think he sticks around with the team moving forward.
Teams need to, well, the teams without, say, 3-point guards in their roster really need to be looking at a guy like Weber. Like the Cavs could look into him, the Knicks could look into him, because he is a really good defender in that situation. We've got a lot of other issues, but he's a guy that with a huge amount of tenacity, who these teams who have only got the 2-point guards on their roster, I really think should be looking at Bryonte, because I'm with you, David. I don't think that he ends up making the final roster. I think we've covered everybody on this team now, guys. So thank you for coming on and chatting with me. Wes, let's give the podcast one more plug and your Twitter handle as well, and any articles you've got coming out.
It's Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg. And thanks for having me, man. This was a really good conversation. I really enjoyed it.
No problem, Wes. David, let's do the same for you. If you've got anything coming out written-wise, and your Twitter handle.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at dramil, R-A-M-I-L 13, and I write regularly for Today's Fast Break, Hardwood Paroxysm, and a couple others here and there. So all my work is published there, so you can find it on Twitter.
Yep, go ahead and follow both Wes and David, and subscribe to the Locked On Heat podcast. Actually, what you can do now as well, if you want to listen to all the Locked On NBA podcasts, there's a separate RSS feed just for the Locked On NBA pod, so you just subscribe to that and all of the NBA team podcasts come through on that one feed. So that's an idea as well. Leave a review for this show and a rating, and do it for Locked On Heat as well. Go in there, 5 stars, give it a review. That helps the show immensely, helps both all of our shows immensely. So thank you to everyone who has done that. You follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. Check out Basketball Monster. Got 30 team previews up written there, a rookie preview, a sophomore preview, a third-year breakout article, an article on contract year players, an injury primer, a whole bunch of stuff that's going to be coming up as well, plus all the projections and tools that you hopefully know and love. We are done here. Wes, once again, thank you.
Thank you.
David?
Always a pleasure, Josh. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.